Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast that chats openly to amazing guests to entertain or inspire us in an achingly human way. Now, this is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Emily Dean. Hello and welcome, Emily.
Hi, Nikki. It's so nice to be here.
Now, Emily is a writer, a broadcaster, a radio co-host, a TV producer, an actress, and even a podcaster herself. Now, Emily, you're usually on the other side of the microphone yourself with the lovely Frank Skinner on Absolute Radio. How did that get started then?
I work with Frank Skinner. I do his show on Absolute Radio every Saturday, which I love. I mean, it honestly is the best gig ever. And I sort of pinch myself that it's my job, to be honest with you. But I got started in quite an unusual way. I'd been a journalist for a long time. I'd done all sorts of things. Some people say dilettante. I say portfolio career, but it took me a while to get to the thing I really wanted to do, which was broadcasting, because I didn't know I wanted to do it. And sometimes it just takes one person to believe in you, to be a sort of mentor and a guardian angel. And Frank Skinner was my guardian angel. That's like Freddie Starrett, my hamster. But no, I think Frank, I knew him socially. We were friends. We would hang out a lot. I knew his partner, Kathy, really well, and we had friends in common. And we just got on really well. And he was offered a radio show, this is about 8.5, 9 years ago. And I think he just thought, I'd like a genuine friend, someone I get on with, rather than, you know, someone famous from telly. And it was that dream phone call. And I didn't hesitate. As soon as he asked me, I thought, why haven't I been doing this forever? Because this has just made me so happy. But actually, I can't sort of stress how grateful I am to him, because I think I lacked the confidence to believe that I could do that. And the fact that someone like Frank, who I had such respect for, so smart, so funny, so clever, so brilliant, thought I might be kind of up to it to sit in the studio with him every week. It just made me, it kind of made me believe in myself a bit.
That's fabulous for other women out there as well, isn't it? Believe in your dreams and keep your confidence up.
Yeah, I think confidence is a key thing for women. And I think to be able to, for me anyway, to be able to work with two, I work with Frank Skinner and I also work with Alan Cochran, who's the other comic on the show. And to be able to work with them as equals, and I genuinely mean as equals, because they give me so much space. They let me completely take over most of the time. They do what I say.
Women really do help and inspire and influence other women, don't they?
I think they do, absolutely. And for me now, what's interesting in broadcasting, I have the radio show I do with Frank, and obviously there's me and the two boys. There are three of us in this marriage, but it's not crowded at all. We all get on very well. But I'm interested in the fact that in terms of women that inspire me, there are women like Joan who inspire me, women like Kirsty Young. I now do my own podcast for The Times called Walking the Dog, where I interview people, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But she's someone who I look at and I think she nails a good interview. She's great. She's not frightened of pauses. She asks brilliant questions. No pressure, Nikki. You're doing brilliantly. But I look at her as someone and I think, right, if I did an interview and it was ever a tenth as good as her, I'd be happy. But I'm also really inspired by younger women. And that's something I've been aware of recently, that women my age are much more aware of their experience. I know what it's taken them. I'm more familiar with that. Whereas younger women, I'm interested in how they deal with situations. I don't know about you, but I certainly felt I had to be tough. That was very much how I felt. And I look at this generation of women and I'm pleased for them, because I think they can show their vulnerability a bit and be a bit more authentic, maybe.
Wow, that's inspiring, you know, for all generations of women, isn't it, with their careers. And that's what we want to do in terms of give them determination. And you've covered glamorous events from the Oscars to wedding and style. I mean, laughter is obviously an important factor for you, because you have worked with a lot of comedians. You've worked with David Baddiel and Russell Howard and obviously Frank Skinner, huge names. I mean, is laughter important in your work with broadcasting?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think for me, people often say, how would you like to be described as a broadcaster, or what would you like someone to say about you when reviewing you? And I think I'd like someone to say I was irreverent. I think that would be my dream. Yeah, and funny. Funny is the dream. But I'm not a comic and I haven't done stand-up. But I think to be able to work with comics, I've learned so much and continue to learn from those comics. Just about reactions, about how to have a conversation on air that appears to be completely natural and is, but all the while I feel what I'm doing when I talk to Frank and Alan on the show and we're doing a link, I'm sort of producing a little bit in my head. So you're sort of juggling a little bit. And I do that with Frank and Alan. Frank will say something, frankly, weird, let's say. And I think, where's he going with this? Where's he going as I'm talking? And more often than not with Frank, he's always thinking 10 steps ahead. But I think you have to walk hand in hand with comics. And someone called me once a comic whisperer. And I think I might change my Twitter bio to Comic Whisperer because I think it's about understanding the rhythms when you're working with comics. And even though I'm not a stand-up myself, what I think I do understand is how to work with comics. So that makes doing a chat show, for example, when I'm interviewing Jimmy Carr and we're talking about ostensibly something quite serious, I'm thinking, right, I can see he's building up to maybe come in with a zinger now, so I'm going to step back and, you know, it's all that sort of stuff.
Fascinating. No, I'm just loving hearing about it. You obviously admire them hugely. And you mentioned your dream career in journalism, Sunday Times, Sunday Magazine and InStyle. What would you recommend to other women wanting to get into journalism and a glittering career like yours?
Oh, I love the idea of having a glittering career. I sound like a Julie Cooper heroine. I love it. Well, when I started in journalism, I did the sort of quite standard North London media family, which is what I was from, career path, which was I'm going to do English at a university in the southeast. That's sort of what everyone does. And I loved it, but I didn't really have a sense of a purpose. I felt I wanted to do a job, frankly, that would sound good at my parents' dinner parties. You know, I didn't want to bring shame on the family. And so that left publishing, journalism. They didn't encourage me to be an actor, even though my mum had been an actor, because she used to say, really ironically, well, you need to be able to pay your bills. Yeah, unlike you. Anyway, when I started in journalism, I left and I went straight to work experience at the Sunday Times. And I just, in those days, as I'm sure you'll remember, you just got the Media Guardian on a Monday and all the jobs were in there. Obviously, there was no internet, kids, I'm afraid. So you just sent off letters and you to loads of places, God knows who. But the Sunday Times replied, which was great. I don't think I realised how lucky I was. And they said, yeah, you can come in for a couple of weeks. So I did. I think I got £20 a week for my expenses. And I lived in London, so, you know, I was lucky enough to be able to not have to pay bills and things. And I just sort of refused to leave. I was like, you know those people in relationships and you think, how are you still together? And you think, oh, that one of them has just refused to leave. They just won't leave. I was like that with the Sunday Times. I would be on Sunday Times Style and they'd say, I'm really sorry, Emily, but unfortunately we need that chair back for a sub-editor this week. I'd say, no problem. And then I'd just turn up in the book section the next week and say, hi, I'm here. And I just didn't leave. And I moved from section to section and eventually I got a job on the magazine as a researcher. I had a really inspirational person there I worked with, who was a guy called Tony Chambers, who is a junior designer and is now the editor-in-chief of Wallpaper magazine and is one of my greatest friends still. And again, he really, much like Frank did, something about northern men, I don't know what it is. He took me under his wing. Frank's not northern, sorry, Midlands, but you know what I mean, not London. And encouraged me and supported me. And so from then I just, you know, once you've got your foot in the door, that's it. So I moved around. I think my best job in terms of I loved the business card was the Evening Standard editor at large on ES magazine, because it sounds so glamorous.
It is so glamorous. You've had some amazing careers and reinventing yourself. And the Times, as you'd mentioned, obviously love you because you've got a very successful podcast that's quite new, Walking the Dog, launched recently. You'll have to tell us about that. Working with the Times, and you literally record walking with your dog and your celebrity friends, don't you?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I was approached by the Times and they were moving online and I'd been deputy editor at InStyle magazine for, I think, maybe 7 or 8 years. It was great. But I was sort of had that feeling. I just felt something big was happening in my life and I wanted a big life change. But yeah, so I could feel there was just rumblings of something happening. And it coincided with a time in my life I'd had a really bad time, actually. I'd had a couple of bereavements. I basically lost my whole family in 3 years. My sister died, followed by both my parents, in a kind of 36-month period. So out of something awfully sad like that came something quite extraordinary, which was I just thought, what an insult to them to sit around not doing what I really want to do. So it's quite common that with kind of grief, I think, isn't it? I just had a complete rocket up my bottom, and I had the show, I left install, the Times, it all just started happening. The Times got in touch, they said, we want you to do this. I was so excited, it was my dream podcast, and also I just decided to get a dog. So yeah, so it's been amazing, and luckily people keep leaving comments on the iTunes page saying, what are you going to do when you run out of celebrity friends?
Find some more. Oh, I'm so sorry about what you've been through, but what an amazing thing to happen after all of that, and the positive after that horrible time. And to be out walking must be really good. And is your dog okay? He was actually in the hospital this morning, bless him, wasn't he?
He was. Live news as it happens. Nikki got in touch about this interview and was being super professional. And I was pretending to be professional. And then I had to send her an email saying, sorry, my dog's being castrated, so I might be a bit late. So, no, he was really brave. He gave me the eye, the evil eye, as if to say, I know what you've got in store for me, you horrible woman. But he's fine. But he's become, you know, that's been interesting for me, that whole experience, because it's, I know, you know, I've heard Ricky Gervais talk about that, saying make what you love what you do, essentially, and you'll never work a day in your life. And so for me, to be paid to do a job which involves dogs and my friends is sort of my dream. So it's fantastic. And yeah, the Times have been amazing. They give me so much freedom and they kind of leave me to get on with it.
I'm not surprised you've gone straight to the top of the comedy charts with all your friends. And you even won an award when on Frank Skinner's show all together as well, didn't you? Now, I heard the Jonathan Ross one. I mean, that was fabulous because you had people coming up and literally, you know, it's very real, isn't it?
That's what's so nice about the format, I think, is that you'll be out walking with someone, and someone like Jonathan's great because he's such a pro. So it's sort of a gift of an interview because he gives you so much. You just have to literally press record and he's off. And he's also a really open, honest person. And he's very authentic. And people like that are great to interview because there's none of that front. He actually doesn't care. He doesn't do many interviews. To get him was such a coup. And it was really lovely of him to do it because I know he hates interviews. He said that during the show. He said, I hate. But, you know, I was really touched that he did that for me. And I think he's one of those people who he goes in and he will do a show and he's able to do, he sees it as a performance, which it very much is. And it's not a character, but it's a ramped up version of who he is. Obviously, for a Saturday night entertainment show, you have to be like that. If you just walked on and went, hello, and here are my guests, as you would in real life, no one would watch. But in real life, he is quite a private, introverted person. And I feel that really came across and I'm really proud of that.
You've loved meeting and producing various people. And we've talked about how women overcome hurdles. So let's talk influences. We've talked about your amazing family that's inspired you. And can we talk about some other passions? How do you occupy your time when you're not walking the dog and working showbiz and media all at the same time?
Well, I have to be honest. I do spend every waking hour with that dog. I mean, I'm obsessed by him. He's become my new obsession. So I would say the dog is up there. Honestly, I mean, I watched a film with him the other day. It's a bit weird. I've become that mad dog person. So he is, I mean, I've only had him 5 months in fairness. I'm sure the relationship, you know, we're in the honeymoon period at the moment. But yeah, I think I had this kind of slightly Emily 2.0 life change that I had a couple of years ago, where after this loss that I had, I went away to a retreat in Ireland, and it's a thing called the Hoffman Process, which anyone listening to this should read about, because a couple of people I've interviewed have done it. Russell Cain's done it, and various other people. I know Dylan Jones wrote an article in GQ about it. And it's really life-changing. You just essentially, it's kind of working on yourself. And you kind of go back, you deal with any issues you have with your parents or all that kind of stuff. And I learned a really important thing on that, which stays with me, which is everyone is guilty, no one is to blame. And I really live by that. So it's the idea that we're all messed up. So you acknowledge everyone's F-ups, but you accept them. And yeah, so I suppose in a very long-winded answer to your question in terms of my passions, I've got very into sort of reconnecting with things like nature. And it sounds really weird, but I go for walks. I never used to. And the dog's been great for that because that really calms me. It's like you know, when you dock your phone, it's like that's what it's like for me. It's literally like charging the phone. I just think if I feel myself getting stressed, we both work in the media, we know what that's like. Sort of unimportant things can get trivialized and dramas created. So I just think, right, I need to stop. I need to go for a walk. Don't take my phone with me. On this retreat I went on for, I think it was 8 days, no phone, no internet access, no computer, no book. Just alone with your own thoughts. So I've learned to do that now. I think I realise the warning signs, and I think modern life's getting to me. I need to just check out for an hour.
I don't think that's crazy at all. I think more women should do this.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about mantra, and that is beautiful, that one that you just mentioned.
I've got another one.
Oh, you've got another one.
I'm a mantra person. Oh, I love mantras, Nikki. So another mantra I heard was from Hugh Laurie, not from him personally. I'm not that bad a name dropper. I was reading an article and he was talking about trying something new, because I think he does music as well, Hugh Laurie, doesn't he? And he said he was talking about procrastinating and having the confidence to do it. And he said, and then I realised there's no such thing as ready. There is only now. And that, if I was going to have anything hanging above my bed, I currently have a Henry VIII portrait. It's a complicated story. But if I was going to have a mantra, it would be that, because to me, that's really powerful, that you think in relationships, in work, in anything, there's no such thing as ready. Just do it now.
I like that too. Gosh, mantras to live by, ladies. The greatest influence in your personal or business life, that must be your family, is it, that you mentioned?
Yeah, I think my family, I've only realised now my family aren't here anymore, quite how influential they were on me. Because my family, the irony is I wanted my family to be normal. I wanted them to drive a Volvo and have a Labrador. And my family were crazy people. They weren't like that. You know, we didn't have breakfast. I didn't know what tea was. My mum would say, there was a dinner party last night. Have the leftovers in the casserole dish. So we'd have like Herbe de Provence was our breakfast, you know, scattered on a dish. It was like, it was a crazy life, but I think actually I'm so grateful for that now. And I love that they were irreverent, and I love that they were maverick and a bit strange, and I really miss them. And so I think in some ways I realise how much they've influenced who I am, and how their left field take on everything is what I love. And so, yeah, I would say Frank is the biggest single influence on my career, definitely, and where I am now. I would not be doing this without him. I think he just believed in me, and he thought I had something that was worth sharing with other people. And he's kind of had confidence in me. I was terrible, Nikki, when I started. The first couple of years, I really was. And, you know, he never lectured me. You know, sometimes you can work with men and women, but mainly men, let's be honest, who will sort of say to you, maybe you should do this, or he never did that. He maybe said to me once, you know what? And he did it in such an encouraging way. He gave me a piece of advice and he just said, don't be afraid to show that you're bright. And I think that was really useful advice for me and for a lot of women, again, of my generation, I think. It's less of an issue for younger women. But I think I was so indoctrinated with this idea that I was slight, not eye candy, because it's on the radio and I don't think I'd quite pass muster as that anyway. But, you know, that I was dressing. I was window dressing. I was a sidekick. I was a plus one. I just had to giggle. And he absolutely, in a very subtle way, was saying to me, no, just, you know, if you know about Wordsworth, say Wordsworth. Don't think you just have to talk about Celebrity Big Brother. And it was incredibly liberating, because I think what he gave me was the confidence to be myself. So, and now, of course, I realise the success to any good broadcaster, whether it's Jonathan Ross or Michael McIntyre, is they're authentic.
What's your next goal, Emily? I hear there's a book. Are we allowed to talk about it?
Well, I have got a project. It's a writing project. It's very exciting. It's out next year. I wish I could tell you more, but I can't. I will be able to say more soon, but it's kind of the most exciting writing project that's ever happened to me, and it's come about as a result of all these things, my podcast, the radio show, the stuff with the Times. So, you know, I'm going to leave you on tenterhooks.
Now, we do have some male listeners too that we appreciate, and hopefully Frank will be tuning in. So do you have any insights you'd give to men and women to support their dreams and influences?
Yeah. I mean, I think it feels like it's interesting doing the show, because I always think of Absolute Radio, where I work, as predominantly a male station, I guess. But we've got a really wide demographic of listeners, sort of men, women, kids, you know, elderly people, all that sort of stuff, which is good to keep in touch with what people are thinking of you. And I mean, obviously not bad comments on Twitter. I don't read that. But in terms of sort of advice or just about following your dreams, I think it applies to both sexes, really. And I think, you know, there are obviously different challenges for women wanting to get ahead in this industry than there are for men. And there always have been. I hope they're lesser now. I hope it's easier for them. I certainly found when I was getting into journalism, like I was saying earlier, I think I felt I had to be somebody rather than just be myself. And actually, one piece of advice I would give to men and women, and I know this is probably advice a lot of people on this show give, because it's true, is just integrity, be authentic, be your own person. Everyone you meet in this industry who does well is themselves. And, you know, even the person that you see, I was talking about Jonathan Ross in his chat show, that's still him. Yeah. You might ramp up your personality slightly. We do for the radio show. I mean, you know, I'm not that hysterical. Frank's not that much of a git. Alan's not that dour. Those are all really exaggerated forms of our character. But I think honesty, I think ever since I started being more honest, things have happened for me.
That's lovely advice. I think everyone will appreciate that. Anything else you want to add then?
Just, I think I'm an example of someone who has had a bit of a 2.0 life, because I had my career up until a certain point in my late 30s, and then I kind of had this extraordinary opportunity and offer from Frank, which was utterly life-changing in every single way. But all the experience I had before that was really useful, and it informs what I do now. And I think actually being in a 9-to-5, having to meet deadlines, not being a crazy freelance broadcaster has been useful, because it means I slightly bring a discipline to the work that I do that perhaps I wouldn't have had I not done that. So my sort of, the thing that I would find, you know, useful if I was listening to this, I suppose, is that you can, it's never too late to be what you want to be, essentially. I think there's this idea, I even meet young people wanting to break into this industry in their 20s saying it's too late, I haven't done this, and it doesn't matter. You can, at any age, you started doing this podcast, you know, we're not 21 anymore, but we've both started doing what we want to do, essentially, and not thinking, oh, well, I'm not 23, I can't do this. And I think that's a really dangerous thing to do, to just think this is it for life, this is what I'm doing now. I would say I'm a big believer in chasing your dreams. I mean, make them realistic, for goodness sake, you're never going to play for England. But in terms of achievable things, yeah, you can create your own opportunities, absolutely. And especially now, the way media is now with, you know, YouTube, with the internet, there's kind of no excuse not to. There's a lot of people I meet and they say, I'd really like to write. I'd really like to do a podcast. Do a podcast. Just do it. Just get on with it.
So be open to opportunities and get on with it is what we're saying to everyone listening today.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, again, for men and women, be nice, be likeable, be easy to work with. You know, I was talking about Daisy, our producer of the radio show. She's worked with us all that time. We're quite a tricky customer. No, we're not really. But, you know, we're big personalities, and she's nice and likeable and easy to get along with. And I think in whatever field you work in, it does essentially come down to work hard and be nice to people, which is very trite. And, you know, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I think as someone who, as I say, had female role models like Madonna, who is wonderful, and again, was one of those people with the machete carving through the undergrowth for everyone else. It's okay to be gentle and kind and compassionate as well.
And even vulnerable is what you're saying too.
I think so. I mean, for me, I think people like vulnerability. And actually, we were talking about role models, and Sheryl Sandberg, I was listening to her, Sheryl Sandberg, actually. I always say Sandberg. Sheryl Sandberg, I heard her on Desert Island Discs. And I was never interested in her because I am a bit turned off by business people. They scare me because I'm a bit dyslexic and I find it frightening. But I listened to her Desert Island Discs. I don't know if you heard it. And she was talking about her husband, and when she just started crying and her voice broke. And I thought, what guts to do that publicly and to not say, can we stop this and start again? And again, she's a kind of struck me as a real 2.0 person. that lean in Sheryl Sandberg from maybe a while ago. Now she's written this Plan B book and it's much more human, that side to her. And as a result, I think much more likeable.
Well, great to meet you and thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you, Nikki. It's been so nice to meet you. I really loved being on a podcast called Influential Women, because I've been telling everyone all day, what are you doing? I'm doing the Influential Women podcast. But now I have to go and get my castrated dog.
Thank you, Emily, for sharing your time, your humour and your insights and vision with us today as a showbiz influential woman and broadcaster at large for women today and tomorrow. This Influential Women's podcast is presented by Nikki Bannerman and co-produced with Juliet Nichols. Please keep listening for more podcasts and subscribe for free on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and influence other men and women to download, listen, and subscribe.